Good Monday morning, you guys. How about the Super Bowl? Oh my gosh, you know we're going to have to dive into that. And Usher, before we dive in on Author Talk. But you guys listening to Author Talk with Amy, Sandy's back today. Russell and her is Christina. So let's go around the room. Who was everybody going for the Super Bowl?
And I just recognize that you are at your mother's house right now.
I am.
You mean because of the mess behind her?
That's so rude. Russell is not a mess.
That is not a mess.
Oh my gosh, don't let my mama hear you say that. She lives in fear whenever I come. She's like, it's such a mess. It is not.
Well, you fire.
It's very organized.
You
color coded? Wow.
I was that organized.
It's not color coded. It's like messed up on left on the table coded.
Oh, Russell.
Oh, gosh.
He is going to be you are in for it, Russell. Anyways, who were you guys going for the Super Bowl? Did they win? How was it? Tell me your experiences. What'd y'all do?
So I was voting for Taylor Swift's boyfriend's team.
Okay. So he won. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Russell.
Okay. So two things. Okay. I have a long story that I will tell when we talk about our weekend. But my granddaughters, my 6-year-old and my 2-year-old granddaughters posted a picture on their mother's page with t-shirts saying, Sandy, that they were for Taylor's boyfriend.
No,
so cute. Cuties.
Trust me, I heard somebody say that on the news and I'm like, oh, that's perfect. I'm gonna
it's so
that
funny.
Like,
it's so cute.
It's so cute.
I love it.
So cute. My little one was for the 49ers. She's 4. She picked those. She was adamant. She woke up in the morning. She goes, did the 49ers win? I said, we didn't even have the game yet. But I was for the Chiefs. I thought, yeah, I like them. I like the whole Taylor or Travis thing. I don't know. I love. So I'm like, this is so cute. And
Me too.
I went for them. I see
we're going to have trouble, Christina. I'm against
love. I love it.
I'm so not loved.
We're going to have trouble.
Russell,
you be you.
So
you be you. I'm cool with that.
We'll see what you're like after 41 years of marriage, Christina.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm not there yet. Let me say. Mm-hmm. I have my days, Russell. I have my days. I am human.
So what did everybody think of the halftime? What was everybody's opinion of the halftime? I was thoroughly jamming out, okay, but I grew up listening to Usher. Yeah. Good morning, you guys.
Who doesn't love Usher?
I love Usher.
Yeah. I think he's getting old, though.
No, it was great.
I must say this without telling about the weekend. Okay. My wife at the beginning of halftime screamed at me to take off my Kansas City Chiefs shirt and go take a shower to wash off any bad luck for the second half.
Oh my gosh.
So I missed halftime.
Oh my gosh.
Bless your heart. Bless your heart. No.
She was fanatic.
You probably wouldn't have appreciated it like we did.
It was great.
I love Usher.
Yeah.
I actually seen Usher. Usher performed in the park outside my high rise, and I sat on the balcony drinking too much, watching Usher live down from my balcony. Mm-hmm. So I love Usher.
Yeah.
So that's perfect. Perfect.
Anyone that can
sing and dance like that is just like bow down because I can't do those things. So I wish I could do those things, but
it was good. The blend of music, you know, from one song into the other was great. Yeah. And then Little John and Ludacris. And then
Who doesn't love Ludacris? I love Ludacris. They're one of my favorites.
So fun.
It was a lot.
And it's funny that all four of us like that music.
Yeah.
We all like the music of the 2010s.
Great music. Alicia Keys also loves.
Well, I like Usher for what he does to help up and coming artists too. Mm-hmm. So when he kind of took Justin Bieber under his arm and helped him, I love it.
They should have squished him.
Success will do that.
Yeah, I know.
That's kind of what Russell said. I love it when somebody helps somebody else on the way in.
Team player.
Definitely.
Yes.
Okay, well, get to your weekend, Annie.
This weekend, I was diving into it, Russell. Now I'm just going to elongate on that just to bother
you. Good.
No. So this weekend, you guys, as you can see, I'm at my mom's. So my granny came in town to visit all of us, my dad's mom. For those of you that don't know, you didn't watch the show a couple months ago, back in October, my grandfather had passed away. And so she came down to visit us. She's here with my uncle hanging out. So I drove down on Friday to spend time with her. And yesterday we actually celebrated her 90th birthday. So she won't be 90 until April, but she's going on her cruise. It's her first cruise that she's going to go on in April. So we celebrated with her here. And so she got to see all the grandkids. She hadn't met my youngest yet or any of the younger babies that were born in December yet. So she got to
meet them. I love it. Go grandmother.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. So happy birthday.
It's so much fun. It's so great to see her. My kids are down with her right now. And they've already claimed that she's their granny, not mine. Mm-hmm. I have no rights to her anymore by any means. But it's just, it's been so fun. We don't get to see her very often. She lives over in Bossier City. She's a big LSU fan. So that's where my LSU side of my family's from. So it's just wonderful and fun to get to see her and to celebrate and do all these things. So that's my weekend. And then Josh came down on Saturday and he took off to Dallas this morning. And since it is Valentine's Day week is what I'm going to say, because Valentine's Day is on Wednesday, I'm going to take this 4.5 hour drive with two children by myself. Wow. I'm going to drive up there and spend the week with him while he's
You should.
Aww.
Yeah, so I'm going to do that. I also am doing a presentation for a group of indie and small presses tomorrow night that I'm very excited about. So this week has a lot of exciting stuff, and we kicked it off. Been it with my granny, so it's been just so much fun.
That's a wonderful story. I love it.
Mombi, I will let her know. So what all did you guys do besides the Super Bowl this weekend?
Well, for me, this weekend was Lunar New Year, which in case you don't know, which I didn't, that includes all the Asian countries. So I have a Vietnamese daughter-in-law and a Vietnamese grandson, half Vietnamese. And so we celebrated with them over the weekend. We went to them to dinner and to lunch yesterday, actually, because they went over to like Chinatown on Saturday. And so we went to them yesterday. But it's just, I just love being able to celebrate people from with their other countries and other races and other beliefs than I do. I love celebrating the differences. So anyway, it was a great weekend. Mm-hmm. And then the Super Bowl. And then boring, boring game until all of a sudden they won. So, yay.
To the last, like, 5 minutes of the game. Russell, what did you do?
Okay, well, Kat, let me first, Sandy, one of the most wonderful things about Houston, and once you don't live there anymore, like I don't anymore, you really miss it, is Houston is such an international city. That holiday is actually a part of Houston. And you can go just about anywhere in Houston, and you may happen on a dragon on that weekend. Mm. And that's happened to me two or three times while I lived in Houston. It's one of the great things about Houston. This is more than just a weekend, but the weekend was the Super Bowl. I had the weirdest football year. I'm a football fanatic. And I'm actually a Kansas City fanatic because one of the many universities I went to was the same one that Mahomes graduated from. Mm. So I'm a big Mahomes wacko. Mm-hmm. And since he's a Chief, I'm a Chief fan. Mm-hmm. About halfway through the year, I made a comment about the Philadelphia Eagles to my wife, who's she'll watch the games, but she doesn't read the stuff and follow the stuff. I made some comment about the Philadelphia Eagles, and she corrected me. And this was during our morning coffee that we always have together and talk before we start our day. And I was like, what? You're totally wrong. And we looked it up right then, and she was right. And what had happened was when she was watching the Taylor Swift info TikToks, and by halfway through the year, it started being about the Eagles and the Chiefs, because that's the Kelce brothers. Mm-hmm. And from then on, all year, she had more information than I did about those two football teams. And we would get into these big discussions about what was going on with the Eagles, what was going on with the Chiefs. And this went on all year, including last night. And that's why at halftime, when the Chiefs just, as you say, Sandy, it was a dull game. They were outplayed. That my wife yelled at me to take off that Chiefs shirt and take a shower to change our luck, because it was all my fault.
I know. I like how she blamed you for it. You were the weight of the Chiefs' terrible
It was all my fault. So I missed Usher because I had to take a shower to wash off the bad luck before I was allowed to come back downstairs.
Did she record it for you? She should have recorded it for you.
I love it. She was intolerant at what I'd caused.
Yeah. The granddaughters, you're so powerful, Russell. So powerful.
I know, and the granddaughters were so scared at 6 and 2. Oh, the first 6-year-old, because they were having to go to bed. The game wasn't over. And Taylor's boyfriend was losing.
Yeah.
It was terrible. And so it was a totally bizarre and weird Super Bowl night that I'll probably never forget. It was great.
Well, at least you'll never forget it. You know, like, tensions were high up first quarter. You know, the Taylor Swift's boyfriend, I feel like that's his new name, though it is Travis Kelce, I believe. Right.
I believe.
There was tension. I do know it's that. But there was tension, you know, between him and the coach and the players at the beginning. But the last 5 minutes and in overtime, they pulled it out, right? So, you taking a shower was great, Russell. Thank you so much.
You helped it out so much. Like, you really changed the course. You're so powerful. Really use that power for good, Russell.
No, that's use my that power wife's for good. Power. And if you had heard her yelling the instructions to me, you would know she wasn't kidding.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, I believe that she was not kidding. I believe that 100%. Well, Christina,
that's a great story, Russell.
Yeah.
Go, Melinda.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So, Christina, what did you do this weekend besides the Super Bowl?
How could I follow that? That was so good. It's quiet around here on the weekends. I have made a pact not to work on the weekends. I take my time. I relax. It's all about relaxing for me because I work really hard during the week. So, yeah, just a lot of relaxing. We took my daughter to dance class. We went to Costco, which is, you know, was like the highlight of the weekend, preparing for Sunday. We have the family over.
I love Costco.
I love Costco. And family is so important to us, especially with our little daughter. So we had, our parents over for the Super Bowl. So I prepped for that. It's like, I love entertaining. I love hosting people. I love everyone together. I don't get to hang out too much because I'm running around, but I do love it. So yeah, it was all about that and relaxing and enjoying each other. That was what we did. And we did have fun during the Super Bowl. We stayed up later than we should have, my daughter included.
So nobody yelled at you at halftime?
A lot of screaming and yelling about a lot of things. And it was just because we do a pool. So like it was the four of us and we did like our own little pool, the four of us, something just really simple. And but two of us picked the Chiefs and two of us, the parents picked the 49ers. And like my husband and I picked the Chiefs. So there was a lot of, I just stay quiet and kind of laugh, but everybody's fighting and who's doing, and someone would do something right. And the other one's yelling, oh, don't say that. I want them to win. And we were cracking up. So we had fun with it. You know, it's all in good fun. But it was just very loud. And my poor daughter's like, everybody's yelling. I can't, you know, she's watching her show at one point. She was coloring and watching a show on the iPad. She's like, we need to pause the TV so I can hear my iPad. I said, listen, sister, go in your playroom.
Not today.
I don't think so. Go in your playroom with your iPad. She was so cute. And she did. She was like, I'm going. But it was just funny because it was a lot of energy and all just fun. We had a good time.
Oh, I love
that. That's a great idea. You know, because every now and then there's a Super Bowl where we don't care. It doesn't matter to us who wins because we're not for either team. But if you pick one and you pick opposing ones, that does make it fun. I love that idea.
And it was silly. And it was like, you know, it wasn't like a lot of money. It wasn't about the money. It was about just enjoy the game. We were doing all season long. You know, all season long, we had the parents over. We did crock pot and we'd have football Sunday. And, you know, it was a time to be together. And we did a pool also.
Okay,
we did
all season long. Last part of that story is awesome. So you did it every Sunday. You made it kind of a family event and it was football. That's
we love football. We're a football house. We love it. We love it. Yeah. All different teams. We've got Cowboys. We've got Giants. We've got all of the different ones, you know, and in between we like, we like different teams. We just, not just our team. We like a lot of different teams. So we play in college too. We love college football. So anyway, we make it fun. Family fun football, Sunday football.
That is great. I have four sons, and it was when they were all four teenagers. that it occurred to me that I either learned to like football or I spent every Sunday all by myself because they and their dad were all around the television. So I asked a lot of questions to start with, the most confusing game I'd ever got to know anything about, but I love it now. Yeah. I really love it.
It's fun. Brings people together, I think.
It does. It does. Great weekend.
Oh, not always, because it didn't bring me and my wife together. Yeah.
That's true. You're right. You are right.
Russell, it's your time to shine.
Oh, yes. Christina, we are, our podcast is top 10 independent book podcast in America. We are really grateful that we get so many listeners during the week. Mainly we get listened to during the week while people are working or working out or driving to work. Most people don't listen to us on Monday morning.
They don't watch
you us. Can, right. And you can find us on your podcast channel. Amy had done some changes to us that it went from I could never find it when I wanted to find it to I found it the first time I looked after her changes, which was brilliant. Amy, how do people find us?
Yes, so you guys can find us anywhere that you can listen to a podcast. So Spotify, Apple, Google, Good Pods, Amazon, a bunch of other places that you guys know I tend to just miss because those are the ones off the top of my head because that's what I use. Go and type in Author Talk, two words. You'll see the crimson, red, and gold because I was selfish and made that because I really liked it in those colors. And then you can hear every episode that we have ever done in the 8 years that we have been doing this. The ones that we used to do by Russell's poolside from his apartment in downtown Houston with him and Sandy and me turning the camera around, just popping in every now and then to what we have evolved to today and will continue to evolve to. We've listened and talked with so many amazing authors and others within this writing community and publishing community, and we're just humbled and grateful that we got that opportunity to hear their stories and how their books and everything came about. So talking about stories and how they all came about, Sandy, let's kick it to you and let's get Christina talking about her book.
Absolutely. Christina, it is so nice to meet you and I can't wait to read your book. I've already bought it, so I can't wait to read it. Five Happy Choices. But before we talk about that book, since this is a new audience for you and you're new to us, tell us a little bit about who is Christina? When did you start writing and why? And just a brief version of your history.
Absolutely. So I've always been writing for as long as I can remember. I actually, my passion is for thrillers and mysteries. And from like fifth grade, I was writing dark stories. I actually, my fifth grade short story about a cursed medallion won an award. And I thought, I want to be an author. And, you know, life gets in the way and years go by and I go down the psychology road and I would get my master's in psychology and I'm helping profession. I love to help people. But I, you know, somewhere around 2010, I got this bug in my ear. I don't know where it came from, you know, call it a little, you know, angel or devil in my ear that said, you got to write a book. Like, it's time. And I thought, I'm writing a book. Like, I've never written a book. I've written short stories. Like, how do I jump from short stories to a novel? How do I do that? It was a novel, really, I wanted to write. So, yeah, I started writing. I took writing classes. I had a writing group. I just did all the things. You know, I'm a forever student, so I took anything I could to learn. I want to learn. Let me learn about the craft. Let me learn about the business. And I started writing. And by 2014, I had my first thriller book picked up by a publisher and published. It's called Choosing Evil. And then I went down the road of writing thrillers. I was writing some paranormal, some more domestic thriller, all different genres because I, you know, get bored with one thing. I'm like, I flutter around, you know, I'm like, oh, this little shiny diamond. And I want to write that, but all in the realm of thriller. And that was for many years. And it took getting to 2015 when my mom passed away and I was devastated because she was my best friend. And it was kind of quick for me to reconcile. I said, hold off on the thrillers. I had written a lot after that. I was diving into the dark side, but I thought I got to work on me and I want to help again. I want to get back to the helping person inside me. And that's where Five Happy Choices was birthed from my experience, not just in writing, but from my experience in psychology, being in the helping profession. Also, in that time, I had become a certified professional coach. So I was really about helping people. That was what it was about for me. So that's kind of where that went.
That is a great story. And I love how losing your mom was the momentum for you to go back into the psychology and write the five happy choices. So so tell us a little bit about why, because I did see that it's five steps to being a living a happy life. So tell us about a happy life.
Sure. So COVID hit. You guys remember that? The pandemic, anybody? And it was it was dark for so many people, me included. You know, I have my issues with anxiety, and anxiety is part of who I am, but I really, it fed off that. And I thought, I got to get out of this. You know, I got to get out of this funk. I don't like this. I had an infant at home, and I decided to dive into the science of well-being, which is called happiness studies. People call it positive psychology, but there's science behind it. And I decided I'm going to take a class in the science of well-being. I'm going to start learning about happiness because I don't like the way I feel and I don't know how to get out of this place. And that's what birthed Five Happy Choices. Of everything I learned, I took a certification course in happiness, the science of well-being, and I learned about what kinds of things you can do. It's not just about feeling, right? Because happiness is a feeling, of course. It's about living a happier life, which is about taking action, doing something about it. And that to me has always been about choice, empowering yourself to make choices. I found I picked five, you know, there's so many that I thought science backed and that I felt comfortable with and I thought were important in the wake of the pandemic. And I thought if I can just get this out there, maybe it'll help somebody get out of their funk. Somebody who's stuck in this isolation, stuck in feeling disconnected and feeling, you know, desperate and just alone and kind of in a state of fear. A fear-based. And so, yeah, that's where Five Happy Choices came from. It was backed in science based on pandemic really spearheaded that. There was a culmination of things. And with that, I looked into, okay, how does our brain work? And where, how does our brain trigger happy feelings? What can we do to trigger those in the moment? So for me, this book was really about, I want something quick and dirty and easy that we can say, I'm in a funk. I need to get out. What can I do? What can I actually do? Because it isn't just feeling, it's doing. The doing makes you feel good. And the more you train yourself to do things, then you have coping mechanisms in your back pocket. You know, I know if I'm feeling, you know, bad and it's okay to feel bad, I can dive into that. And I do, by the way, I go down the hole because you got to deal with it. And then I'm like, it's time to come out of the hole. What can I do? I got to physically do something that even in the moment might not feel like it isn't logical in the moment. Like, I don't feel good. Why am I going to go do this thing or say this thing? But it helps pull you out. And that's the point. The point is to know there's hope. You can get out of your funk and we can, you know, we can make choices that help us feel happier. And it's teaching. It's a teaching. You know, it's not innate. We don't know. We just have to be taught and reminded that we have the power to feel good.
I love it. Love everything you said. And I had researched some before I even saw your book, that was the title. I had done some research on people who speak on happiness and living a happy life. I honestly, when I was growing up and until the last few years, never knew anybody ever studied happiness. I mean, you're just happy or you're not happy. But I did not realize there are steps you can take to be happy. And I love that. And I love everything. I loved your bio, by the way. I was like, man, I wish she lived close by because I could be really good friends with this person who's like everything. She believes in everything paranormal. I'm like, right. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And angels and all the other stuff. I was like, wow, what an incredible person. I'm so glad we had a chance to meet you. I'm glad I got to be on the week you were on so I get to meet you.
Thank you, Sandy.
And you've had some great successes with your books as well. So you are a best-selling author. Mm-hmm. And has the best-selling status been through the books or the Audible books?
So, well, it was the books, like the Choosing Evil. Every one of them has hit a list when they first came out. And Five Happy Choices was the number one new release in positive or applied psychology, which was really cool for me because I had never written nonfiction. But Audible really helped. I feel like the audiobooks to this day do really well. And it was a freak thing that happened. This is kind of a cool story. I feel like this is what I believe. It doesn't, not everybody believes this, but I believe that what's meant for me is coming for me. It doesn't mean I don't have to work hard. It doesn't mean I don't have to put the energy out there, but it means if it's meant for me, it's coming for me. I don't know if you've ever heard the saying, if the train doesn't stop for you, it's not your train. I believe that. If I didn't get the agent, if I didn't get the publisher, that was on purpose and it's okay. And I let it go. I don't dwell on it. It's like, that wasn't for me. It wasn't my path. Something else is coming. So anyway, I had this day where I thought I'm going to play a little game with the universe because I'm feeling like stuck. And I literally went to bed that night and I had this vision in my head of something really amazing happening with a book. And I thought, oh, I'm going to picture myself. I pictured like something outrageous. Like I pictured myself like having a book turn into a movie and I'm writing a screenplay and now I'm at an award. And I pictured this wild fantasy, right? And I said, I'm just going to picture that. And I'm going to go to bed thinking, what if something fell in my lap and amazing happened that I did nothing to ask for? I didn't ask for it. I went to sleep, woke up the next day, went about my business. And then I get a phone call the next day from my author assistant. And she's like, you're not going to believe this, but Audible wants to turn your book, Among Us, which is a government conspiracy thriller. She wants to turn your book, Among Us, into a teaching mechanism for authors. So they're going to do a video. And I'm like, I don't know what are you talking about? What does this even mean? I never had even heard of this. So anyway, I get a call from Audible and I ended up going to Celebrity Studios and they videotaped me and it was a whole video series on how to make an audiobook for authors. But I just thought it was the coolest thing, being in a studio, hearing your book come to life. And I had always been an audiobook lover, but this hooked me. I was like, I love this. Anyway, and they went on to find the narrator for me. I mean, I chose the person, Lewis Arlt. But beyond that, I really, just the process itself kind of gave me hope and sparked a little bit like, don't give up. Because I'm telling you, any writer you've talked to, I know, they all want to give up at some point. At some point, it's like, I can't do this anymore. Like, for whatever reason, it's too hard. I'm not making enough money. Like, I'm taking time away from my life. You compare yourself. And I think we all need a little spark to keep us going. And that was it for me. And I thought, I'm going to stick with this and I'm going to keep going. And so I give myself permission to shift gears. I don't stay in a bucket per se. My overall bucket is to embrace what's happening in your life and get over your fears. So whether I'm writing thrillers or self-help, it's like, let's deal with what's going on and let's move on from it. So we can be empowered because, you know, we can't control anything that happens in our life, but we can definitely control, like everybody says, your response to it and how it affects you. So that was really important for me, whether I'm writing a thriller or I'm writing a nonfiction, to give people the power to move beyond something that maybe is they're afraid of, or that's holding them back.
I love that. I love that whole philosophy. I had a client the last few years, and he wanted me to do nothing for him but help him find an agent. And after 2 years, we did not find an agent. And I, you know, wanted to say maybe this is not the route you're supposed to take, but he was so determined. But I love that. I love that. Say that quote again about the train. Oh,
so if the train doesn't stop, it's not your train.
Yeah, I love
it. And it doesn't mean it's not your train ever. It just means
right.
The timing is everything. You know, I've had friends who've done things for 10, 20 years and then it happens. It's like, and then it takes off like a rocket. The time that they were wishing for it and it wasn't happening, it wasn't their time. For whatever reason, no one knows. And that's why I was laughing when you reminded me of, like, you know, that I believe in the paranormal and all these things. And the truth is, I believe, I don't know it all. I believe anything's possible. I believe that I can live in a world where, you know, I'm not the expert on everything. I mean, I'm barely an expert on what I'm an expert on, right? Like, we're always learning. Everything I learn, and I do say, like, I know self-help, I know happiness, I know psychology, I know this, that, but there's always more to learn. And part of being an expert is being open to learning, being open to being challenged, being open to saying, I got to look that up, because we're human, you know? So that's a lot of it too, is like giving ourselves permission.
I have a question for you. Are you familiar with TED Talks?
Yes. Of course.
Have you ever done a TED Talk?
No. I mean, of course, I would love to, but no, I haven't.
I was going to say, because that sounds like from a marketing person to you, the way you're talking and the way you, I mean, I would love for you to check that out because I think you would do a great, great person. And if you do and you get picked, then let me know so I can make sure I look.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
It, so. I love TED Talk. So, Russell, did you have any questions for Christina before I keep going?
I do have a question before you continue. And that is, what do you think, when is self-help what you need? And when is therapy what you need? How do you know the difference?
That's a great question. And I'm so glad you brought that up. Because I think a lot of times people think self-help is therapy and it isn't. So, okay. So I'm going to say a couple of things. Okay. One is I'm a coach, right? And I have my master's in psychology and I actually am in a PhD program for psychology. Okay. So there's a very distinct difference between psychology and coaching. And then there's self-help somewhere in the middle. So psychology, and if you're going to a therapist, it's because you're unable to function. Dysfunction. Okay. Think about this. You're unable to function in life. So your daily life activities, you're unable to perform them. You can't get out of bed. You can't brush your teeth. You're not seeing your friends. You're not doing things that make you happy. You're thinking of hurting yourself. Maybe you're feeling like life isn't worth living. You're living a normal life isn't happening. Now, if you're somebody who rolls out of bed at noon, that's normal for you. Dysfunction. You can't go to work. You aren't eating. You know, there's something that's dysfunctional. It changed, right? Okay. Dysfunction to function is why you go to therapy. You want to function. I want to get out of bed. I want to brush my teeth. I want to eat I want to feel like a normal human. Something's wrong. I can't function. That's like a very big red flag. Of course, there's a lot of specifics around certain disorders, right? But very, very basic is dysfunction. Coaching and or even self-help in there a little bit is about you can function. Maybe you have sadness. Maybe you have anxiety, but you're functioning. You're functioning with it. I'm somebody with subclinical, maybe sometimes clinical anxiety, meaning I can have my occasional panic attack, but it's not stopping me from living my life. It's not holding me back, but it's there. I know that I deal with it, but it's called subclinical. We all walk around to some extent with subclinical stuff. It's not ready for a therapist, but you're dealing with some things. Maybe you're a little depressed. Something happened. Function to optimal performance is when we talk about coaching and self-help. You have to be functioning to help yourself. You have to be focused on optimal performance. It's not about, if you're not able to function and you're finding yourself in that situation, and by the way, I've been there, you know, it's called grief. And when you lose someone you love dearly, the first 6 months of loss look exactly like major depressive disorder. It looks like it. It's It's beyond that point. Does it change, right? So it's about dysfunction. And if there's ever a question and you're unsure, I say, reach out for help. Go to a licensed professional. I don't care if they're a master's level professional or a PhD or a psychiatrist or your general practitioner. Talk to them because it's better to get professional help when you don't need it than to not get it when you need it. And I would say, you know, everybody could use a little professional help just to get through life. Sometimes we are our own worst enemies. Even if, and this is another thing I want to say, even if you're not diagnosed with a mental illness, guys, you don't need to be diagnosed with a mental illness. You don't need to be in a clinical state of dysfunction to get help. You don't need to. Okay, but let's say you're functioning fine, but you're feeling a little down or you're finding you're not meeting your goals or you know what? You just feel like you're beating yourself up a lot. Your self-talk is terrible. You know, you're telling yourself, and it's funny, you say, Sandy, why haven't you looked into the TED Talk? A lot of it is my own self-talk. Like, you know, I have to fight myself like we all do and talk to my inner critic and go like, you could do something like that. Like, it's something I've always thought of, but part of me is like, who am I to get on stage? And then I have to turn the conversation around and say, but who are you not to? So it's a lot of that. But yeah, so great question, Russell, because I think their line can be blurred for people not in this area of profession to understand, like, what do I do? But I do tell people, you know what? It can't hurt. If you go to a therapist and it's not for you, you don't go anymore. You know what I mean? And they'll tell you. And by the way, anybody who's worth anything is going to say to you, you're not clinical. You don't have a disorder. You don't need a diagnosis. You need someone to talk to, and I'm here for you. So you could, if you have anybody good, if someone's coming in there and they're diagnosing you right off the bat and you know, like, this doesn't feel right, you go to somebody else. you know, because it's not all about that. You know, years ago, psychology and therapists were about, let's pull out my DSM-4 or 5 now, and let me figure out where you fall. Because you know why? Insurance. We got to pay for this visit with insurance. I got to diagnose you with something. Well, we've worked through that, and there's, you can be at a subclinical level and still get help. But just reach out. Don't be alone. It's not worth it.
Great information. I know there's been times in my life when I didn't feel like I was mentally ill, but I did have decisions to make, and I'm like, I don't know which way to turn. And I have gone and talked to a therapist or someone outside my family that I felt could give me an objective opinion, not somebody that loved me and wanted what's best for me and thought they knew exactly what I should do. Yes. But so I love that. I love that. Did that answer your question, Russell?
That's one of them. You continue though, Sandy.
No, you go ahead.
No, you continue.
Okay. So the thing I wanted to ask you about, of course, I'm a marketing person. I worked with Avi before I retired, and I've been retired now for almost 3 years, which has been definitely a time for therapy because my husband and I both retired at the same time. And learning to live together.
Yeah, you wanted to kill each other.
It's hard. It's an adjustment. Right? Transition. There are coaches for that, transition coaches. It isn't easy. This is new and you don't know how to deal with that. And any new situation requires questions to be asked of you so you can figure out what's best for you. That's what coaches do, by the way. Coaches, if they're good, they ask you and they guide you, but they're going to ask you, you know, to figure out and pull out of you what you already know is what's best for you. Cause that's, I believe that too.
Right. That's great. And actually my doctor, has a nutrition coach on her staff. So I do see her on a regular basis. So I need help in that area, even though after 80 years, I should know everything there is to know about healthy eating. But
shouldn't we all? Yeah.
Christina, can I ask another question?
Yes.
Can you give us one example of what you do, one of these, does your book explain it through stories or is it more clinical? I know you're going to say it's through stories, right?
Yeah, I'm a storyteller too, right? I write thrillers, but it's through stories, but there is evidence-based information as well as what you could do, some examples of what you could do. And there's a workbook too that talks about
so
that.
Where do you get your stories to put in your book to make your points and give us an example?
Okay. So my stories come from life experience and what made the happy choices that I chose, why they were important to me, why I chose them, because there's lots of different things that you can do research-based, right? I picked the things I picked. So for example, I'll start with kindness. Kindness is my first happy choice. What is kind? What does that mean? Kindness. It's about your there is a relationship. There is a research-based relationship between doing kind things for others and feeling good. So when we feel sad, if we did a kind thing, right, we would feel better in that moment. Like that's why there's this whole random act of kindness campaign and, you know, all of these things, because doing kind things makes us feel good. Where did that come from? So, you know, growing up, I was an only child. My mother and I were very close. She's a lot in this book because I feel like she inspired me in so many ways. She was a really, like, I could saint her because she was such a good human being. Listen, she wasn't perfect. Nobody was. But, you know, growing up, a mom and a daughter, we had our issues. Like, we weren't always getting along, you know, especially those teenage years, especially, you know, the young adult years. And I just, watching her in retrospect live her life, like when you're in it, sometimes you don't see it. But I recognize that she had so many things in her life that were against her. Growing up, certain things happening to her. Just, you know, she was, you know, we weren't like uber wealthy. We were, you know, working class family. She always pushed me to strive for the best. And I say this because with all the things in her life, you would think, my goodness, even when she was diagnosed with cancer, this woman should be miserable. This woman should be lashing out at everybody. She has a right to. She's got so much. No. kindest, most generous person that ever walked this earth. And she was like an angel and everybody loved her. And I heard nothing but wonderful stories. And what I recognized in retrospect was that she wanted to feel good. She was kind to feel good. Kindness made her feel good. And being kind was a way of life for her. She would think nothing of talking to anybody at the gas station, in the store. I mean, I heard a story about her when she died. There was a guy, she used to work at a store, and there was a man that would come in there that didn't have a lot of money, and she could tell, you know, he was paying with change and things like that. When she got a new car, she gave him her car. She was like, you need a car more than I do. Here you go. Didn't sell it. She gave it to him. And I had heard something like this, and I had forgotten, and then at her funeral, the guy came to her funeral and said, your mother was an angel. And I thought, but that made her feel good. In a way, it's selfish because you want to feel good, right? So, but it's okay. Those are the kinds of stories I shared because I felt like when you look at who's being kind, it is self-serving because you are trying to feel good, but that's the point. It's like, let's make somebody else feel good so we can feel good. And by receiving kindness, we also feel good. So is there science behind it? Yeah, but it also is, it can be a way of life for people. And it really took her dying and looking back on her life. And the way that I dealt with grief was when I got over all the hard stuff was to say, how can I go through this life being a little bit more of the things I loved about my mom? How can I keep her here? And I keep her here by picking out the stuff I loved about her and trying to be more of that. Because by the way, when she was here, I was not that I'm not a kind person and I wasn't kind then. I was not her. I was like, I don't have to be so great. You're great. You know, like I leaned on her for things that I didn't have to worry about. Like, oh, you're going to take care of everybody at Christmas. You're going to make the phone calls. I don't have to do that. I'm going to piggyback with you because that was easy for me, you know, and I think more socially. But when she was gone, it was like, here I am. What am I going to do? Yeah. So it fed my soul. And it was something that I feel people can relate to. You know, you're having a downtime, you know, you've got nothing, maybe giving something to somebody makes you feel good. And you know, you can live with that. That's control.
That is wonderful. I can't wait to read the rest of them. As a matter of fact, I think I'm going to get a book for each one of my 30-year-old grandchildren. Aww. I think that would be great. So anytime I really like something, I always buy for them because I know they will appreciate it. And I know, Amy, we're reaching the end of time for this broadcast.
I just don't like my look from Russell. But I have a question. So, Christina, where can anyone go to get any of your books, your thriller books, your happiness book? Where can anybody go to pick those up?
So my books are where all books are sold, and they're on Amazon too, if you guys are Amazon, but they're Barnes & Noble, they're Kobo, they're all over. And also my website. If you're unsure, just go to ChristinaRienzi.com, and there's a page for books, there's nonfiction and fiction, and everything's right there.
How do you pronounce your last name again? How did you pronounce it?
Rienzi. Christina Rienzi. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Thank you.
Let's do closing questions, comments, statements. Russell, you.
Okay. You should, in all your interviews from here on out, start your interview somehow by telling that story about your mother. That's Aww. The best things you said the whole interview.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for
great
coming.
Great advice. Thank you so much.
I love it. Sandy.
I 100% agree with Russell. That is a great thing. And I know in speaking that when you start with a story, you know, you could just continue it from then on. And then anyway, lots of stuff that you can do. And I know you're familiar with most of it. So if we can ever be of help to you, we'd love you to reach out. And I would love to, after I read the book, I'll be in touch with you and let you know. I did sign up for your email list. Yeah. And I loved how you did that. So it's really cute how she says, no spam, no, just lots of love in the emails that she sends out. So I'm like, oh, that is so sweet. Anyway, it's been great to meet you, Christina.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much, Sandy and Russell. And
oh, hi, Russell.
Yeah, I don't use the love word.
Oh, my goodness. No.
We know you have it in your heart, Russell. I just
it's
know.
It's there. It's just really deep down, but it's there.
It's
somewhere
there.
Buried in there, yes.
There.
For sure. Well, Kwizina, we want to thank you for taking time out of your afternoon, mm-hmm. early afternoon, to come and hang out with us here on Author Talk so we can get to know you and all of your books and your journey to becoming an author. You are welcome back anytime. Mm-hmm. So the next time that you decide to go down this adventure, please let us know. We would love to have you back. But from all of us here at Author Talk, we hope that you all have a fantastic Monday, a great rest of your week. And until next Monday, you guys, we'll talk to you then. Bye for now, everybody.
Bye.